This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.
All three major indexes took a dive today. How the broad retreat on Wall Street is connected to China's property market. Plus, Pfizer and BioNTech say their COVID-19 vaccine is safe for kids ages 5 to 11. We'll have more on next steps. And our Supreme Court correspondent sits down with Justice Stephen Breyer to talk about the latest abortion case, his role on the court, and the pressure to retire.
It may be a very long time till we see a character like Stephen Breyer on the Supreme Court again. So as we watch what he does over the next year, let's pay attention to the substance of it and the way he conducts himself, and not just whether he is going to be heading out the door.
It's Monday, September 20th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. This morning, we told you about the steep sell-off in Hong Kong that pulled the Hang Seng Index to its lowest level in almost a year. That sell-off and its root had ripple effects on Wall Street today. The Dow ended the day down 1.8%, the S&P 500 lost 1.7%, and the Nasdaq fell 2.2%. Those were their steepest declines in months. Our markets reporter Gunjan Banerjee has more on what's behind the global downturn.
There are concerns over this property developer, China Evergrande Group, and there are concerns that they will default and that, you know, they were tremendously over-leveraged. The reason this is trickling into global markets is that, you know, China plays such an important role in the global financial system. So will this spill over into banks around the world, which were some of the worst performers in the stock market today, as well as, you know, just going into this sell-off today, there were broader concerns about the U.S. economy slowing down, inflation. So there were a litany of concerns that investors were paying attention to. And I think this just spooked some of them more than it would have otherwise.
Pfizer and BioNTech say their COVID-19 vaccine is safe for children ages 5 to 11 and that they plan to seek emergency authorization from U.S. regulators as early as the end of this month. The companies say their two-dose vaccine generated a strong immune response among the children in a late-stage study and that it was well-tolerated. So far, the companies can't say much about efficacy. Not enough young subjects in the study have become sick to compare rates between kids who got the vaccine and those who got the placebo. Younger children have a lower risk of severe disease and hospitalization than adults, but young children have been going to the hospital in greater numbers due to the spread of the Delta variant. The Biden administration is set to relax a set of COVID-19 travel restrictions for foreign nationals. Bans had been in place limiting travel from the EU, China, and a number of other countries. Starting in November, foreign nationals will be allowed to enter the U.S. with proof of a COVID-19 vaccination as well as a negative COVID test, taken within 3 days of departure. In addition, airlines will be responsible for contact tracing of all passengers coming into the country. We report that Royal Dutch Shell PLC is close to a deal to sell assets in the Permian Basin to ConocoPhillips for around $9.5 billion. That's according to people familiar with the matter. The sale is one of the largest transactions in the shale patch in recent history. The deal, which could still fall apart, comes as Shell is attempting to reduce its carbon emissions and invest more in renewable energy. And the Securities and Exchange Commission has launched a wide-ranging investigation into Activision, the video game publishing company behind hits like Call of Duty, World of Warcraft, and Candy Crush. Sources say federal regulators are looking into how Activision handled employees' allegations of sexual misconduct and workplace discrimination. The SEC has subpoenaed Activision and several of its senior executives, including longtime CEO Bobby Kotick, according to documents and people familiar with the matter. A spokeswoman said Activision is cooperating with the SEC. Coming up, our Supreme Court correspondent Jess Braven on his interview with Justice Stephen Breyer.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. Insights. You need them to solve business problems, but buried in volumes of disparate data, they're seemingly invisible. C3 Generative AI enables business leaders to instantly access secure, hallucination-free, verifiable insights from a unified knowledge source, all with a natural language search. Turn the invisible into the obvious with C3 Generative AI. Learn more at c3.ai.
The Supreme Court has been in the headlines a lot lately, especially after a divisive decision that allowed Texas's new abortion law, the most restrictive in the nation, to stand. Liberals have expressed concerns about the court's makeup, which shifted further to the right with former President Trump's appointees Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett. All of this is well known to 83-year-old Justice Stephen Breyer. Since the death of Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg last year, he's been head of the court's liberal minority. Some activists and lawmakers on the left have been pressing Justice Breyer to retire to ensure that President Biden can nominate his replacement. So, what are his thoughts? Justice Breyer recently came out with a new book, The Authority of the Court and the Perils of Politics. And our Supreme Court correspondent, Jess Braven, sat down with him for an interview at his home in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hi, Jess. Thanks so much for being here.
Oh, you bet, Anne-Marie.
So, Jess, let's start with that topic, retirement. Democrats currently hold the White House and, by one vote, the Senate. That gives them control of judicial appointments. What kind of pressure is Breyer facing over this, and what does he have to say about all of it?
Well, Breyer faces a lot of public pressure, op-eds, comments from some senators, even a billboard truck driving around the Supreme Court, a little gauche, really, for a Supreme Court justice. But he's aware of it, and he has made quite clear that he's going to retire on his own terms, and he doesn't want to be seen as an act of political influence. Here, let him explain it himself.
I don't want to die there on the court, so I probably will retire at some point. There are a lot of different considerations, including health and also including the institutional role of the court and so forth. And I'll take those and other things into account.
So that's him saying, look, I get it. He's another line he likes to use is, I wasn't born on Pluto. You know, I read the newspapers. I see what's going on. I think that for him, there are certain reasons why he wouldn't want to immediately head for the exits as soon as Biden and the Democrats took over. Part of it, he doesn't want to send a signal that he is a purely political actor when his whole book is about how the court shouldn't be seen as political. Secondly, it's a seniority-based operation at the Supreme Court. He has gained a lot of seniority with the passing of Justice Ginsburg, and to walk away from it immediately might be a little frustrating after having been her junior for her entire term on the court. And perhaps he felt he was in a better position to deal with the new conservative majority than the less experienced justices who would succeed him. The next in line in seniority from the liberal wing of the court is Justice Sonia Sotomayor, who joined the court in 2009, significantly after Justice Breyer did.
Now, Jess, Breyer has also been in the spotlight for criticizing recent proposals from Democrats, including Senator Ed Markey of Massachusetts, to add seats to the Supreme Court. Can you explain his thoughts on proposals to expand the number of justices?
Well, Justice Breyer likes to take the long view, and he's written in his recent book and in a prior one, talked about the history of the Supreme Court and how it gained public confidence over the centuries when it really has no police force of its own to enforce its decisions. And he thinks that tinkering with the court for clearly political reasons, because one side, in this case, basically his side, is at the bottom of the heap, ultimately will be against the interests of the court and the country.
Of course, I do understand it. But the difficulty is, what institutional changes, or to what extent will institutional changes solve that problem for him or anybody else? Because after all, if one party can do it, two parties can do it.
So basically he's saying, you know, all right, if the Democrats increase the size of the court to get enough Biden appointees who can outvote the six conservatives, the next time the Republicans get a hold of the steering wheel, which, you know, will come one day sooner or later, then they add 10 more justices. Before you have it, everybody's a justice in America.
Let's get to one of the most recent hot button issues to reach the nation's highest court, abortion. The Supreme Court was asked to act on an emergency request to stop Texas's abortion law from going into effect earlier this month, but the court declined and the justices were starkly divided here. Breyer filed his own dissent and joined those from Chief Justice John Roberts and Justices Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan. Can you talk more about his feelings on this particular issue?
Well, this is a case from Texas, as you say, it was an emergency application. And Texas's law, which bans pretty much any abortion after 6 weeks of pregnancy, is unconstitutional under current doctrine by almost any measure. It's almost impossible to see how that could fit under the current precedents, Roe v. Wade and Planned Parenthood versus Casey. And so abortion providers in Texas said, please block this law from going into effect. And the Supreme Court, by 5-4 vote, said, no, we can't get involved in this case at this point, because Texas has crafted this law to essentially take the state out of enforcement, but provide significant damages for any private party who successfully sues an abortion provider. So Texas specifically designed this law to create a procedural obstacle to federal courts reviewing it before it goes into effect. And the majority of the court, in an unsigned opinion, by the process of elimination, we know it was the five most conservative justices, said, we can't touch this law now. Maybe in the future we can. Maybe state courts can. We're not saying whether it's constitutional. We're just saying we don't have the power at this juncture, before this law has led to any lawsuits or cases, to intervene. Justice Breyer dissented, as you point out, so did the Chief Justice and two other liberal justices, and he made very clear he thought it was wrong.
Well, I wrote what I thought. I thought it was absolutely wrong to decide it was a case involving Texas law, and the court held that the procedurally the case was not properly before us. And I wrote three or four pages in dissent, where I said we shouldn't decide something like that on an emergency motion, and the law should not take effect while we decided it, looked into it more thoroughly.
As we know, this is not the final word over abortion. Perhaps there never will be a final word over this issue, given the way the country is divided. But he's, you know, looking forward to the next case.
Jess, you also spoke to Breyer more broadly about the role he feels he plays on the court, how deliberation should be conducted. What else stood out to you from that interview?
Justice Breyer, it's been said about him that his strength is his weakness. He is an eternal optimist, and so sometimes he may come across to some people as naive. At other times, that kind of optimism and engagement may win over a more cynical soul from time to time. Hard to know. But I spoke to him about what he thinks should go on among the justices when they meet in private, because that's where they do their deliberations. And he had a lot of thoughts about it after, you know, so many years on this court and previously on a federal appeals court.
The key thing is so obvious, but it's called listen. Never get into, I have a better argument than you, ha, ha, ha. When you get into that kind of argument, the other person says, well, I have a better argument than you. And that gets the group zero advance. Listen to what the other person said. And then try to see what you might say that might be useful given where that other person is coming from.
Of course, listening to the other side doesn't mean that we always get agreement. And Justice Breyer, who has written plenty of dissents over his time on the court and joined many others, is well aware of that fact.
When you write, you should be clear. And particularly in the cases that have an interest attached to people who are not lawyers and judges. And they are there. They're gun control, they're abortion, they're all. If you're going to write in a case like that, be very clear and explain very clearly why you take the position that you do. And you should do that in every case to the extent you possibly can.
I think that people who have spent many years following Justice Breyer, as I have had the privilege to do, can try to read between the lines of what he's saying. And I think that the book he has just published and the remarks he's making and the great attention he's getting now might be seen as a sort of valedictory to his career on the court. And it's not a career that went exactly the way that he might have hoped. He was, as a liberal jurist, he was in the minority for the entirety of his time on the Supreme Court. He had some notable victories, many defeats over that time. But as you hear, he's somebody who likes to think that the process matters as well as the result, perhaps even more than the result. At some point, as he told us, he is going to retire. He's 83, so that may come sooner rather than later. And as we think about what he did, you know, it may be a very long time till we see a character like Stephen Breyer on the Supreme Court again. So as we watch what he does over the next year, let's pay attention to the substance of it and the way he conducts himself, and not just whether he is going to be heading out the door right now or the next day.
Wall Street Journal Supreme Court correspondent Jess Braben. Jess, thanks so much for joining me today.
Anytime, Anne Marie, thanks.
And that's what's news for this Monday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. I'm Anne Marie Fertoli for the Wall Street Journal.
This message comes from Wall Street Journal sponsor C3 AI. C3 Generative AI equips enterprises with verified, traceable answers. It's secure, hallucination-free, LLM agnostic, and IP liability-free. Learn more at c3.ai. This is Enterprise AI.